This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits. Make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
The following podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Brett Boone Podcast.
Remember when me and you almost went to blows? Lou sent me down three times too, so I know what you're talking about.
With your host, MLB All-Star, Brett Boone.
Bottom line is, you will become a successful major league hitter by hitting pitchers' mistakes.
As he sits down with his sports and entertainment friends from around the world.
You are not going to be a successful major league hitter if you hit pitchers' pitches.
This isn't just any former jocks podcast.
To change the outcome, you got to change the income. You got to change what goes in. Then that changes what goes out.
Often duplicated, but never replicated. Just like his bat flip.
Okay, now the party starts. The responsibility starts now.
Now in its fourth year, this is the one and only Brett Boone Podcast.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. I am Brett Boone, and today on the program, I sit down four-time manager of the year. He's an alumni of the show, and he's back at the MLB Network as an analyst. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Buck Showalter. Buck, thanks for coming on the program.
Brett, thanks for asking. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm in San Diego. You're in Secaucus. A little bit of a weather different climates, let's call it that.
We're going to leave that one alone, but you're in a good place, sir.
Three things from opening weekend, the MLB season. First, it's been beaten to death. Quick take on what you're thinking Ohtani-wise. And tell me this, Buck. I when I first heard the news, you know, I've been in this game a long time. I guys like to bet on football. They bet March Madness. We've got pools going on. But then I started watching the game. Every single advertisement, everything is bet this. They're giving you odds mid-inning. You can bet at the stadiums. Anyway, your brief take on the Ohtani situation.
Well, you know, I try not to talk a lot about things I don't know a lot about, although it seems like in today's world, people weigh in on things that they really don't know about. But what is it called? Talking heads. But I hope for baseball's sake, there's nothing there, and it's what is being portrayed by them. I really do, for baseball's sake. Because that, you know, we got a season starting, and the last thing we need is something like this. But you can see how the temptation is there. You can see how, it's been embraced. It's part of our society and our world nowadays, people wagering and betting. I think I'm naive to how much it goes on. I never was one that spent, I play a game of golf. It may be five on the front, five on the back, five overall. I mean, you know, I want to enjoy it, but I think there's, I know the commissioner's office is going to try to get to the bottom of it. They're going to be very diligent about it, make sure, because it is something that the game has to be careful about, because there's a lot of elements, as you well know, Brett, that I can remember going out in the parking lot at Yankee Stadium back in the early 90s. This guy used to always, as I'd walk out there, was talking to me about players. And it finally hit me one time that he was trying to find out about the pitchers, if they were healthy or not. And he was betting on the games. And I was like, wow, I guess that's the epitome of insider information. Could you imagine if all you did was tell people about the health of the team and who was going to play and who wasn't, how you could shape certain things? That's what's scary about all this.
Do you remember, and you probably remember this, Buck, remember back in the day, for those of you watching the Boone podcast, listen to the Boone podcast, every year in spring training, we have several meetings. It's just what we do. And one is always Major League Baseball. They come in, FBI, and they have a it's usually one of our fun meetings where the guys get a kick out of it. And the one year, you probably remember when Michael Francis, the mobster turned government informant, he came out and gave us the whole pitch on it. I've talked to Michael since. He goes, "Booney, guys like me, we want to get close to you, give you everything you need. All I'm looking for is insider information. That's all I want from you."
Yeah. You know, people get, you know, in the stock exchange, people get fined or thrown in jail for that. And that's what they're looking for. And it's a temptation. Sometimes it's innocent and people don't even know what they're doing. But, you know, those meetings, I tried to have all those meetings in one day, one-stop shopping, where you just line them up. And there was a security meeting. And you're right, they were entertaining for the most part. But they had a tough crowd to perform in front of.
Number two, what happened, and you'll be very savvy on this topic as a player. I've had him by my skipper. I don't know if this early in the week, early in the season, but after game three, Angels start off 0-3. Ron Washington calls a team meeting. Now, as a veteran player, if my skipper calls a team meeting after game three, I'm kind of looking around at my, you know, my teammates, veteran teammates, go, "What are we doing here? What are we doing here?"
I think it was after game two, wasn't it?
It might have been after game
okay.
two
or three. It doesn't, I don't think
that's a little panic.
Now, you know what? I got to see DeRon. He knows the feel. It's kind of like, I'm not going to wait that long. This is not what we talked about in the spring. Just a little reminder. It's a long season, but this is not going to flush. Okay. And I know Ronnie's not one to wait around for the tea leaves to be perfect. He feels something, and that's why he's been successful. I mean, this is who I am, and here's what I'm going to let rip. It's one of those meetings where people, if you want to shock them, you probably did. It's like working out on an off day, which I think they did. I mean, hey, what's the old expression? Play better. You don't like it? Play better.
Play better. You get to do what you want. You get to show up at the yard, take BP if you want, not. But you got to play really good to do that. And we talked off camera, and this is an interesting topic. The third thing I'm going to get to on the first weekend of the Major League Baseball season was the controversial play. Your old team, the Mets, McNeil's playing second base. Hoskins slides across the base. People up in arms. They ended up, the last guy in the bullpen ended up throwing a ball behind him. Now, as a player, when my, you know, I played a lot of years with the Norm Charlton types where, as position players, I let the bullpen took care of their business when they felt like it was the right time. Your take on the whole situation from the slide down to Hoskins going 3-for-3, his last at bat, they throw one behind him. Pitcher gets ejected. You know, bench is kind of clear. Early take on that.
Well, you know, once again, Brett, I'm not there, and I'm not going to get too deep with where the Mets are concerned, but the you know, Hoskins has a way of kind of rubbing. There was some history there. He's just, you know, I think if you go back, I think you're the expert on this as far as the pivot and the way it's changed. I used to show a video every spring to our infielders and stuff about just tape back when, you know, if you want to lose players, say, well, back when I played, they don't want to hear that stuff. Right. But I just want them to understand how Joey Cora and Brian Butterfield and Willie Randolph and, you know, all these coaches, why they had certain mindsets or rolling their eyes sometime when you guys talk about contact. This is the way the game used to be played. That doesn't make it wrong or right, okay? You know, the rules are there to try to keep the players healthy. But understand where they're coming from. That contact there, you know, Jeff was the one that got upset about it. And then, you know, someone wants to react or whatever. It all started, Brett, as you well know, from a poor feed. Right. You know, the feeds at his feet, which made his spikes be in the ground. He had to get the out, so it wasn't like he could catch it. You know, as a second baseman, you got a clock. And if the ball's fed right, you know you're not going to get hit if you follow the fundamentals or turn a double play back then. Now they don't worry about it. I think you and I talked about it a little bit off camera. Guys just aren't worried anymore about getting hit. You know, it was a legal slide. That's why I knew the league office was going to come down on them, because they deemed it a legal slide, and then there were some repercussions. I know Ron Darling had a take that if you were going to throw at somebody, you should do it before he gets three hits. What's your thoughts, Brett?
My thoughts, you want my thoughts on the turn or on Ron Garland?
All the above.
Okay. I think here's the thing. I'm with you 100% on the guys today and their preparation. And I don't know if I fault them because the game is what it is.
Right.
In my day, you had every drill we did, and I think you made light of or you brought some light to it in our conversation when you said in the box. That's a great analogy for people out there wondering what in the box is. I used to draw a box around second base. I'd have to draw it bigger now because they got those big bases, that big rule change that we really needed. Anyway, I'd draw this big box around the base, and all my footwork would take place inside that box. But I was always on my toes, and I was always up in the air because I knew somebody was trying to get me and throw me into left field. The job of a player in for all of baseball up until the last couple of years around the bag, where you made your money as a second baseman, was the ability to turn that tough double play in a tough situation. Now you bring the feed into it. As a second baseman, I worked with many shortstops. My first one was Omar Vizquel, and then I went to Cincinnati. In 5 years, I played with Barry Larkin, two pretty good guys to have as partners to start your career. But all I said to them, and any time I moved on to another team and had a different partner in the middle, was, get me the ball. The first question, usually in spring training, you're sitting around, hey, Booney, you know, he's my new partner. Where do you want the ball? My answer was the same. I don't care. I don't want it here. I don't want it there. Just get it to me. Because if you get me the ball, I can work what I work around the bag to turn that double play. If you try to give me a perfect feed and then you don't give me a perfect feed late, I'm dead in the water. You saw that with McNeil around the bag. You're right. He got a bad feed. His feet were planted, and when you bobble that ball, you become vulnerable. Now you add the slide over the bag, and that's what he got pissed about. Because in our day, Buck, or your day is still current, but in my playing career, that slide right there is like romper room slide. That's no big deal. We're laughing at that. That being said, the rules are what they are. So you got a young player coming up through the minor leagues. Hey, they can't touch you. That's how you program your brain is, I'm going to turn double play, and I know they can't touch me. Now, all of a sudden, they cross that line. Maybe you get pissed in this new generation. Right. It's almost like the catcher, running the catcher over at home. Yeah. If I thought that catcher had the right of way, there was no way I could be safe at home plate. My only option is to knock him into the dugout. That's my job. Nowadays, you're not allowed to touch the catcher. So can you, when scoring a run, okay, I'm not going to drill the catcher in 2024. I'm just going to give him a little shiver. Is that okay? No, because the catcher's under the assumption of I cannot be touched. So all of a sudden you are touched. Wait a minute, you know, tell me the rules. If I can be touched, I'll prepare for it. But if I can't, you know.
I say it all the time. It's not their fault.
Right. It's not.
You know, it's like got struck out 175 times last year, 180 times, and got a $2 million raise. So don't be mad at him. You know, that's what the industry's paying. So it's not the player. I tell the player, like, you know, with home run trots and different stuff, I tell you where I started years. I would, instead of subjecting the players to the way I was brought up in baseball, it doesn't make it right or wrong. Somebody would hit a home run or something would happen on the field that years ago would have caused some issues. I just look down the dugout. And if nobody's reacting, nobody, it doesn't really matter. It's their game. It's not my game. Right. And that's how you do stay current. You understand that they're, like you said, the way they were brought up in the game, they don't spend as much time in the minor leagues now. You know, they think they spend a certain time at each level, regardless of how they perform, they should be promoted. That's not how it works. And that's why you're getting so many players at the big league level that are still learning the game. But, you know, you talk about shortstop feeds, but also it's that third baseman feed. When they throw you that changeup, or I know your clock, when the shortstop or third baseman on a double play feed double clutches the ball or bobbles it, your clock goes, okay, he's going to be right on top of me. The runner that's coming down the first baseline, how fast is he? Do I bail and live to fight another day? Or, you know, do you have time to get your feet in the air? You know, obviously that clock goes off. You can't teach that. That's something you have to practice.
Without a doubt. And it comes with repetition and experience. I know as a young player, it took me some time, especially when you first get to the big leagues. There's guys that have a reputation. They're coming to get you. And then there's, you know, there's the average guy that, yeah, he's going to break up the double play, but he's not looking to throw you in the left field bullpen. But you're right on that changeup from a third baseman. I remember David Bell in Seattle gave me a changeup one day. And he, first thing he did is come up and I said, David, I know, but you know what happened to me there, right? He goes, Booney, I know what was going through your mind. He didn't mean to do it, obviously. But as you become, you get more reps under your belt, and you be, it's almost when you're going to turn a double play, you do have that clock. I can feel the runner. I can feel the runner if he's on my inside or my outside. So I knew which way I got to make this pivot. And it gets easier as you go. That's the one thing that when they took away that rule and they said you have to slide straight into the bag, I was kind of really pissed off about that because I thought as second baseman, that's where we make our hay. That's where we make a difference between an average second baseman and a great second baseman. Right. Who can turn that big double play in the ninth inning when you got to turn it? If you don't turn it, the winning run scores or the tying run scores. That's where you made your money. Now I look at it, it's like, well, the peanut lady could turn a double play. A left fielder could come turn a double play. So that I don't know, that mystique of turning that big double play, it really isn't there anymore. It's, you know, anybody can do it.
It's funny you bring that up because the other day we were going over some things at MLB TV with the commissioner's office about the new rule changes and everything. And one of them, they were talking about the blocking second base on the stolen base and the knee down and all that.
Too.
I know I'd get your attention on that one.
Oh.
But the thought, you know, the best tagger I've ever had is probably J.J. Hardy. J.J., whether you want to call it a U tag or a V tag, J.J. could get the ball and tag a runner as good. He would probably get us 5 to 10 outs a year how good a tagger he was. Booney, he was the only guy I ever saw catch a short hop this way instead of this way. Think about that.
Yeah.
Try that at home because he didn't want to take the time to come up and go back down. So, but we were always taught and through the years that you go to the bag and you try to get at some point to a straddle position because the ball can travel faster than your hand can. You want to tick off a catcher, go get a throw way in front of the bag and then chase the runner and him barely be safe instead of just letting the ball travel. Well, what we're doing now is we're going to have these guys bailing on second base and going to get the ball and then trying to chase the runner. I tell guys all the time, don't chase the runner, chase the target. The target is the bag. Sooner or later, he's got to come to that bag. So you guys go chasing these jelly legs out in right field and he's backdooring a hand tag. Nobody's to blame but you. J.J. used to talk about him, you know, let the ball travel. And he worked with Manny Machado and John Scope and these guys. And through, you know, passing down this knowledge, made these guys. We got a lot of outs every year because guys knew how to tag. I think there's an epidemic, Brett, of bad tagging.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
I'll tell you, it's tough for me even because I'm from the same school as Hardy that you talk about. You let the ball get there. It's not faster to go out and get that ball. And it's just boom, and it's in and it's out. Now, the dynamic has changed as well because of the rules. You have to physically put a tag, which for me, it's made the game more dangerous. You're now you will open yourself up to spikes, everything like that. It's get it in, get it out. I wouldn't even know, Buck, how to teach a tag now because I used to just – my thing to young players was – we get the ball, we give the illusion. If the ball beat the runner, you're out. That's how it was. That's what the umpire looked for. Get the tag in, show the umpire the ball. So I would teach the kids, boom, boom, and show the umpire the ball. Sell this. Now all of a sudden, selling it doesn't matter because they've got the instant replay. So guys that are out by 5-8 feet, I've got, man, I got my glove down there. It's almost, when the guy's out by 5 feet, it's almost a tougher tag because now he can do the swim move. And I don't know. I don't like that.
You're talking about the practical part of the game where you've been in between the lines. You know what really happens. There's always cause and effect of things that you put in there. And it's like we used to in the advanced meetings, we'd say, hey, this guy's a soft slider. This guy, you can ride him off the bag, in today's game, because we know the replay would get it. There was a guy, Dyson, with Kansas City. There's Terrence Gore, who was a pinch runner. The only way you had is to take them and ride them off the bag because they were soft sliders, any of those guys that came in head first. So, advanced scouting is one of the things you find out. But I was going to ask you, Brett, do you think, like these guys that pop up and they're safe easily, and they come off the bag a quarter of an inch and the tag's applied, you think they should that be out or safe?
Well, I think as the current rule reads, it's like if the tag is on the player, now it's a judgment call by the umpire. Did the force of the tag, the weight of the tag, allow him to pop off the bag by an eighth of an inch? So now it becomes in the umpire's hands. I don't know. I don't know. I have a tough time with the tags because I know how dangerous it is. I know a guy bearing down on me, coming in as hard as he can. And I'm not saying a dirty tag. He's not coming in spikes high. He's just coming in spikes hard. For me to have to physically leave my glove in the zone and take those spikes, sooner or later, you're going to get one. You're going to get one, and it's tough. And I didn't mean to – that. What I was talking about at second base – blocking the bag and now the call. I was never a guy to block the base, Buck. I would never put my foot in front of the base and block it. If somebody did block it, I'm going to try to spike them as hard as I can. Get your knee out of there. I don't like that. I don't like at third base they put their knee down. I was never a fan of that. I thought that was kind of an unwritten rule we shouldn't go to. So I was never one of those guys. I just see that play in spring training, the example where they called it. It was so harmless. The guy was out by so much. His foot just happened to be there to apply the tag. He wasn't trying to block him from the base. And the umpire said, that's obstruction. You got to have a little bit better judgment than that. And now, if he's putting a knee down, he's putting it down that we know he's trying to block the base. If that's the rule, that's the rule. But casually, if a guy's out by 5 feet and my foot happens to be a little bit in the base path, which had nothing to do with the out I'm about to make, you've got to have better sense from an umpire perspective when to call that and when not.
Yeah, I refereed basketball, college basketball. I loved it, Brett. Kept me in shape in the offseason. But I used to call it preventative officiating. Two guys would be banging each other underneath the basket, two big guys. I'd go, hey, stop. I don't want to. They didn't come to hear me blow the whistle. They came to watch them play basketball. So I'd go, hey, get out of the lane. Hey, get your hands off of them. Whatever. You get ahead of it, because I did learn from a veteran official that when you blow the whistle, the clock stops. And now you got more time to mess up. The greatest thing you can do in basketball officiating is leave there and nobody knows who officiated. And that's what I used to tell umpires. You've created an argument that there wouldn't have been one. You got involved in this. We know many instances, as you well know, of guys who over-officiated a game. Hey, you invented an argument. If you just left it alone – like, I believe the players can police the game sometimes better than we do. Sometimes I just go, let the players police it. It used to be, okay, you had your pop, I take my pop, let's go play the game. Because there's nothing worse than getting on a plane feeling like we're not all even to go to the next city, if you know what I mean.
And I think you made a great point because, we've played against each other a lot of games in the big leagues. I've always been a fan of Buck Showalter. I watch you. I know that our brief conversations we've had, we think a lot alike. But I think the point you brought up was really good when you said, you know how I determine how I respond to this? I look into that dugout and see how the players are responding. I think that's the greatest thing anybody can take is it isn't our game. It's not my game from 2005. It's a different game now. And when people ask me, that can't fly. I said, who determines the unwritten rules these days? The guys on the field. So you're right. If a guy that just hit his fourth career home run does a pirouette to first base and that man on the mound could care less, who am I to tell you what to do? Players are okay with it, they're okay with it.
Yeah, Max Scherzer. I tell you, everybody should get it. I love Max Scherzer. okay, being able to manage him for a couple of years, this guy, but he had such great take. A couple of days after he pitched, Brett, he'd come plop down in my office and go, "What's up, bitch?" You know, and we'd talk. And it just about, maybe it's life, maybe it's politics, maybe it's his children, but it's about baseball. But, you know, you're talking about a guy that gets the reality of competition and the way the game evolves and stuff. But being able to bounce things off guys who are current in the game, and it's how managers stay current. I mean, because it's their game. You know, Billy Martin told me a long time ago, he goes, "Buck, you think they really, really care?" He said, "They're going to mourn you for about 5 minutes, and they're going to wonder who the next blankety-blank is coming in behind you." Now, hey, that's a little rough, but, you know, you try to do the right thing, and you treat them the way you'd like to be treated, and realizing that there's a shelf life. It's gotten smaller and smaller on managers. I mean, heck, Brett, I was in Baltimore almost 9 years. Take a picture. That ain't going to happen in today's world anymore.
You're right, too. And the old guard is kind of – Boach is still hanging in there. But you're off the field now. I don't know. I'm never going to say Buck Showalter's done manager. But as of right now, you're an MLB Network guy. And you've managed, you know, starting in 1992, a lot of years and had a lot of success. But the old guard is kind of – you know, I'm seeing guys – Dusty Baker walked away. Francona has walked away. And you're right. I mean, you talk about you got to change with the times, without a doubt, to be successful. I remember when you went back on the field 2022 when Boach was coming back. I played for Boach in San Diego. The question was, oh, that old school mentality. I said, these guys are great baseball men. They'll change with the times. Great baseball men, great managers, I feel, manage people the best. And you got to know who your people. It's not 1985. It's not 1990 anymore. It's 2023. You'll get a feel of your team, the personalities, and know you got to change with the times. Or like you said, this game will pass you up and run you over if you're not changing with the times. I remember this, Buck, and it used to crack me up. And I remember these times, and I love these times so much, and I appreciate them so much more now. My grandpa. He was around for my first 10 years in the big leagues, and I'd bring him to the ballpark whenever he's in town, and he would just nitpick my generation. And Brett, back in my day, see that guy right there? He'd be in the Coast League, and it was awesome. And I would laugh at my dad even. You know, I'd be facing Randy Johnson, and my dad would talk about lefty Steve Carlton. Now he had a better slider. I said, "Dad, this guy's pretty good." You know, now I sit there. I have a son that's in the minor leagues. And I don't take it that serious. I look at the positive things in the game and the real positive changes. Yeah, I don't love everything that's changed in the game of baseball, but I understand you've got to go forward. We're an evolving. It's an evolving game. You know, some things are getting better. Some things, we both kind of wish. We wish it was like the old way, but we've got to change with this game.
Hey, Brett, sometimes I wonder. I go, I was kidding Lindor last year. I go, you guys don't have as much fun as we had. Because if you had really thin skin back then, you had no chance.
Oh, yeah. And I talk about these guys that, oh, they can't do that. I just kind of bite my tongue like, that's just the way it was. You know, that's just the way it was. And I couldn't imagine coming up as a rookie and doing the thing that these guys do. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. Like you said, it's what the players decide is okay and what is not okay.
You know, I came, you know, I remember the first time I scored a touchdown, and for some reason I was a sophomore in high school. I jumped up in the air one time with the football. I don't know what possessed me. And my dad was a principal at this little
You're in trouble.
This little public school that I lived, you know, I went to. We had like 50 people in the senior class. You had to hustle for a prom date, trust me. And he would sit in the library over the end zone. So I get home that night, and he's on the front porch waiting. He goes, "Is that the first touchdown you ever scored?" I said, "No, sir." He said, "It sure looked like it. You know, act like you've scored one before, and by the grace of God, you might score one again. If I ever see you do that again, we're going to have a problem." Yes, sir. But, hey, that's just what I was brought up with. It doesn't make it right or wrong.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's the old expression, adapt or die? Well, that's true.
I agree with that. It's not in the industry. They don't like using it. Old school, new school, but it is. We're kind of at a crossroads in baseball. It is old school, new school. Is it better now? Is that an unfair question to ask?
Which one?
Is it better now? Old school versus new school?
You know, Brett, let's face it. There's a lot of word salads out there right now. You know, it's like I used to take my most grizzled veteran every spring. I would call it analytics, sabermetrics for dummies, and I'd have him sit upstairs with our guys for a couple of days. And then he would sit down with all the field personnel and take the so-called black cloud off all the analytical stuff. And they would come at him and go, oh, is that all it is? I said, Dominic, tell us what it tells us, and then tell us what it doesn't tell us. You know, I tell guys, I said, listen, I could listen to somebody hit and there was that sound I was looking for, but they have numbers and things that tell you exit velocity and different things that I like the idea that when my ears tell me one thing and this backs it up, I know we're making a good decision. And that's why, you know, you have certain things you look at. You don't want that muffled rattle sound off a bat. You know, Brett, that clean click guys make that can really hit and that you hear. I remember the first time I heard John Scope clean click balls over on two fields away. And I went, who's that over there? But it's all the same thing. It's just people on the field, their eyes and their ears and their experience tells them one thing. And when they can get it verified by the other stuff, you know, there's room for everybody. And people that embrace both sides of this are usually the most successful.
Back in New York, Mets team a year ago, Verlander, Scherzer, they moved on to eventually both went to the World Series. Verlander with his old club, Houston, and Scherzer with the Texas Rangers. Start the season, and we're talking about 2023 right now. Start season, your closer Diaz goes down. Quintana wasn't a factor like he could be. Marte, he got 300 at-bats, but he missed a lot of the season. What was that like in New York last year for you? Because you've had a lot of teams, a lot of success, a lot of winning seasons. With the expectations going into a season like that, doesn't always work out. That's why I say, beginning, you still got to play the games.
Well, you're never quite as good as they make you feel like, especially in New York. You're never quite as bad, and you realize how quickly things can change. New York's such a snowball town. I mean, because there's so much emotion with the sports teams there. You know, when things get going well, you can do nothing wrong. When things go poorly, it just, you know, a baseball season is about shortening the bad times and stretching out the good times. You can win. I've been fortunate to have been on teams that won 100 games, and there were times when I wasn't sure we were going to win another game. And there's teams that have struggled that I thought we might win every game we play. Sometimes it was going so good. But, you know, you stay in reality. I mean, everything sounds like an excuse, whether this guy's hurt and this guy. You know, we had injuries. You know, our what-ifs, I call it all the time, one of the best things that front offices and organizations can do is attack the what-ifs. Okay, if Lindor's out all year or this guy's out, where are we going? They go, what do you mean? I go, you know, the season's not going to stop while he gets healthy. What are we going to do? It's funny how you remember certain things, Brett. I remember I go to bed real early in spring because I get up real early and I'm there early. I love spring training, but I had just turned out the lights and my phone text goes off and it's Brandon Nimmo says, are you watching this? And I went, and I turned it back on and it was, I guess Edwin had just, you know, hurt his knee and was going to be out for the year. I knew right then we were going to have some challenges. But, you know, it's one of those things. Nobody wants to hear it. Nobody feels sorry for you. And there's an excuse around every corner. And just like I told the players, you know, play better. And we didn't at that time. You know, I'm a competitive guy. Do I think that we could have still made the playoffs? You're always going to think that, whether it's reality or not. I can tell you one thing. The Mets got back some really good players in those trades. You're going to see them start showing up, and they've had some good drafts. And, you know, the David Stearns walked into a good situation as far as talent, I think. There's some good players in that system, and you're going to start seeing them.
You notice a difference in New York? You've done it on both sides now. You've done it with the Mets and with the Yankees. Is there a difference being the Yankee skipper, Mets skipper?
Yes. I'll leave that.
Big difference? Okay.
No, okay. Not big. There's different. There's a different, you know, I had a good time there. A lot of close friends, but just like everything, Brett, there's some difference in the two places. There's some different, mentality and mindset. Obviously, I haven't been with the Yankees in a long time, but I was there 19 years. There's a little different feeling there, but we're all accountable on New York standards. So,
difference over time in the manager general manager relationship's always been an important one. Do you see a change over time in that relationship? And if so, what have the changes been?
That's a good question. It used to be you were connected at the hip, and they try to be nowadays. I know what I don't know, Brett, and I know what I know. In other words, I'm not going to go in the cockpit of a plane and tell a pilot how to land a plane. I'm not going to go in a heart surgery and tell somebody how to stitch an aortic valve. And the guys that, I think they got a great situation in Texas with Chris Young, who's played the game, educated, but, and Bruce, there's a real respect for what each person brings.
Without a doubt.
Has to do. And that's an ideal situation that every manager looks for, is that I know what I bring and I know what I don't bring, and I want you to do that. I had that with Billy Epler was good. And I, Gene Michael, I've had some great general managers, John Hart. I've had, I've been very fortunate to have some really good ones along the way. Andy McPhail was great. Dan Duquette was there. But that relationship, I can tell you this, if it's not tight, you're going to have some issues, but you have to have respect for what each one brings. You go bring what you do what you do. And what's happened is so many of the front offices now have passed through the commissioner's office, which, gives them a lot of background on how everything works and the rules and the waiver wires and everything. And they come in very equipped, but the best ones come in and realize, I'm really good at this. I need somebody that's really good at that. And then those two together, and a manager that embraces all the new things, and he embraces some of the things that his experience brings, those are the ideal situations. And there's three or four out there. I got to tell you, there's some teams, and that's why they have long-term success. I think watch what happens with the Nationals in the next year or two. If they leave Rizzo and let Mike put it together, he'll put that back together. They're on their way now. There's little things like that. I think that's going on in Detroit now. I do. And you're going to see a reflection on the field as those places go forward.
Yeah, I just think that is so important, that not only respect, but that you're on the same page. You're doing your job. He's doing his job. Everybody do their job and not try to, I'm going to put this team together and send you down the lineup and tell you this and add. I'm sure so many different teams you've managed, and I wouldn't ask you to name them, but I'm sure you've had trouble in some years where, hey, we're just not on the same page, me and my GM. And that's got to be a stark difference from the other side where you mentioned, and I think it's the great analogy right now is the situation in Texas with Chris Young and Boach, the ultimate respect Chris Young has for Boach playing under him. Then all of a sudden getting that job and saying, I'm going to bring my favorite skipper ever in and kind of just trust him. I'm going to do my job, give him the parts he needs. I'm going to let Boach run the game on the field.
Yeah. And you have to sacrifice some ego in order to do it. Let's face it. We all have some form of ego, but I know what I don't know. And but you have to have respect for what they go through, that day-to-day conversation with the owner. And that's why the GMs last longer than managers for the most part, because they have that day-to-day relationship with the owner. And let's face it, managers are like ships passing the night almost. We can go open up another bottle of them. But in a lot of cases, you got to understand where you are on the food chain. It's about the players. It's always about the players. And if you ever think that you as a manager or a general manager, it's about the players, Brett, and don't ever forget that. That's what allows you to have longevity.
Right. There's only so much you can do in that dugout. I get it all the time from guys calling me about Aaron. I said, all he can do is prepare as good as he can. And once that national anthem ends, yeah, you have a few moves you make throughout the course of the game to do the best job, put the best guys in the best situation to succeed. But there's only so much you do game starts.
I was walking down back years ago. Billy Martin would bring in all the minor league managers to camp every year. And there were like seven of us, seven teams. Remember that back when you had seven minor league teams? And we would just follow him around in the drills for a couple of weeks, and he would tell you how to teach this, run down and relay and pick off, and this is how I want it done in the minor leagues. If I get a guy from you and he's not doing it. One day he's walking down the dugout before a game, and he turns to me and another manager says, come on, let's go see what the boys have in store for us today. And I always kept that in mind. I said, hey, you think you got this figured out? You think you can script this? The game gets off script. Teleprompter breaks. Now what are you going to do? That's when you find out what kind of manager you got, is when the guy in the second inning blows a shoe and can't pitch. Now what are you going to do? I tell our GM all the time, so listen, we go to bed at night and we don't know who's pitching tomorrow. If the starter can't get out of the first inning, we haven't done our job. It's always get ahead of it. Get ahead of it. You know, what if, what if, what if? And you've got to constantly do that in order to maintain a level of consistency.
Last thing, and I'll let you get out of here. Talk about this year's Mets. You know as well as anybody, it is a hot seat. Whether you're a Yankee skipper, Mets skipper, it's still New York. They start off 0-3. Not the best seat to be in on a fresh start. You got some of your boys back this year. I look at that team. Senga still the ace of a year ago. He's got that injury. Hopefully you'll have him back soon. But Marte, Diaz, Quintana, they're back. Give me a little outlet or a little outlook on this season, because that's a tough division. I know it's the equal playing field now. You don't beat each other up in the division like you used to. But you got Atlanta and Philly, pretty darn good teams. What's your outlook for the Mets 2024?
Well, you've got an up-and-coming Nationals team. I'm telling you. Rizzo, yeah. Watch what I can see it starting last year. The Marlins now can ambush you. They're pitching so good, and they got a taste of it last year. It's a tough division. If they stay healthy, you know, we were without Quintana, two-thirds of the year last year. He's going to be a difference maker. Single will be back. Edwin's going to be Edwin. Marte's a big cog to get back. I think they're kind of laying in a good spot. I do. I think obviously they're going to get it going. They're a good team, a lot of talent. I think they've got Alvarez all year behind the plate. Beatty's got a chance to pop at third base and do some things. It's basically the same defensive team they had last year, with the exception of Harrison Bader. And they're in a good place. As soon as they get their feet in the ground, they're going to be fine. And I like the manager. I love his path, Brett. When I look at managers that I don't know a whole lot about, Carlos, I look at their path. And, you know, he's been in minor leagues. He's managed. He's been in winter ball. He's been in the big leagues as a bench coach. He's got a really good path. And I think lack of sincerity shows very quickly in the big leagues. You're around people too much time. You can sniff through a phony in a heartbeat. He's not. He's really sincere, and I don't know him that well. I did send him a good luck when he got the job along with Stearns. And I just, you know, I want everybody to, you know, these people that are coveting somebody else's situation, I want everybody to keep their job. And I hope there's 30 managers back next year. And I love his path, and I think he's worked his whole life for this opportunity. And life's too short to revel in somebody's success or failure or whatever. I hope they do well. I've got a lot of close friends there and people that were very good to me, Brett.
And New York, you know how it is. I mean, it's like they're 0-3, and that city's going to act like they just lost 30 in a row. And that's the nature. That's the nature of the business.
But I tell them, you control it. I used to tell them, but you control this. You don't like the narrative and what's talking. God, you control it at 7 o'clock every night. Go control it. It's not like they're doing something, you know that they paint you too good when things are going well, mm-hmm. and they're going to paint you the other way. So, but thank goodness they're talking about you and you're playing a sport that people care. When you're doing something that people care about, you're going to be critiqued. So hang with them.
And I've always loved that about New York. I never got a chance to play there as the home team.
You'd have been good.
But coming in, I'm telling you, Buck, coming in on a road trip, that was like, oh, this is it. I'm going on the hot stove. And, man, if I have a good series, I'm going to be able to rub it in their face. And if I have a bad series, I'm going to hear about it. But I love it.
But you were from the standpoint, bring it on. I, you know, that's the difference with people like there are watchers and there are participators. You know, people say, how'd you learn how to play golf? Well, I ask people, what'd you hit there? How'd you hold the club? Yeah. How'd you do the blade? Did you open it? Did you close it?
Did you choke down?
Yeah. You know, I wanted to ask. I want to participate. I didn't want to. And some people physically can't participate. I get it. But I wanted to be a part of it. And I tell the guy, I said, you want to be a part of this? Well, you better get in the fire. There's an old Garth Brooks song called Standing Outside the Fire. You know, either you're in or you're out. There's no middle ground. I got to tell you, we used that for our theme song for the expansion draft. Remember when he went to spring training with the Padres?
Oh, Garth Brooks. Yeah, yeah. He got in uni. Yeah, I remember.
Well, Rick Sutcliffe brought him all the way over to an early morning workout we were having on bunt defense or something. And Garth Brooks pulls up and he goes, hey, I heard you use my song for the expansion draft. I just want to tell you, that's a great tribute to me that you used my song. Got in a golf cart and went back. I went, okay, good.
Yeah.
Standing outside the fire, listen to it. Either you're in or you're out.
I love it because, you know, I'll have talks with – sometimes we've got to have heart-to-hearts with Aaron and myself. And you know, it can be tough in New York. I get that. But I just told him, I said, man, where else would you want to be? I said, bring it on. You win in New York, man. You got the key to that city for the rest of your life. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else except for the hot seat because when you win, man, the expectations are so high, and that's what makes it so cool. You wake up every day and you feel it. Well, and there's not too many cities like that.
Well, I'm going to do a thing tonight on MLB. It's called the weight of expectations. And then being able to manage expectations, you know, there's teams on both sides of it. But Aaron does well. He does a good job, Brett. I'm not just saying that because he's your brother. I'm a fan of his. I've always have been.
Well, Buck Showalter, I appreciate you coming on the show and giving us some time today, a little wisdom. And
I'm so busy, Brett. I'm so busy.
You're so well. You got to do that MLB Network stuff, but no, I've I've always been a big fan of yours, and whatever you do going forward, I wish you nothing but the best. I'll be checking you out on MLB Network. 4-time manager here, one of the best to do it. One of the best to do it. For those of you out there watching the Brett Boone podcast on YouTube, now I appreciate you tuning in. You listening on the app or wherever you get your podcasts. Continue to do it. And until next time, keep it here.